Welcome to today's conference call titled Professional Development, Creating a Credential for a School-Age Workforce. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. I would now like to turn the call over to Bob LaValle of the After School Investments Project. Mr. LaValle, you may begin.
Thank you, Doug. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Bob LaValle. I'm the Deputy Project Director of the After School Investments Project, and I want to thank you for joining us for our audio conference entitled Professional Development, Creating a Credential for a School-Age Workforce. I'd like to now introduce Andrew Williams, the Policy Director of the Child Care Bureau, for a few words of welcome.
Thanks, Bob. On behalf of the Child Care Bureau, I'd like to welcome everyone to today's audio conference. Participants invited to call in today were state child care administrators, other state staff who work on school-age care issues, key partners including representatives of statewide after-school networks, and Administration for Children and Families, federal, regional office child care managers and staff, as well as other child care technical assistance partners. The After School Investments Project, which is organizing and facilitating today's call, is part of the Child Care Bureau's technical assistance network. The project helps state child care officials and their partners address the unique needs of school-age children and programs. And for the last 5 years, the project has developed a variety of written materials, created state profiles, and provided state-specific TA in response to requests. This technical assistance has helped states in a range of areas, including the development of professional development systems for after-school providers and staff. And as one component of their professional development systems, a number of states have developed a credential for school-age workers. On today's call, we'll learn more about these credentials, including how they were developed and are being implemented. I'd like to thank all of today's presenters for sharing their experiences with us, and would like to now turn the call back over to Bob.
Thank you, Andrew. And while I'm giving thanks, I'd like to thank Soumya Bhatt of the After School Investments Project, whose skills and effort make these audio conferences possible. And I'd like to briefly introduce our guest speakers, who we'll be hearing from shortly. We have with us Vilma Williams, who is the Director of Training Services at the Council for Professional Recognition in Washington, D.C. Carol Weisberg, who is the Coordinator of Early Childhood and Youth Programs at Charter Oak State College in Connecticut. And Harry Kujak, who is the Director of the Missouri After School Network. I also want an extended invitation for you to visit our project website. The URL is listed on your invitation materials. We'll be posting the transcript of today's presentation as well as materials from the event. Also, on there will be an evaluation form which we'll hope you'll fill out. Your feedback is very important to us. I'd like to take a few moments to set the context talking about professional development and credentialing, and then we're going to turn it over to our speakers, so I'll try to keep it brief. I think most people would agree that after-school quality is driven largely by the quality of staff, and when we think about developing staff, we're really talking about professional development. And as a side note here, when I'm talking about school age, I'm referring to ages 5 through 13, and although I understand people often use after school in a broader context up to older youth, but this is directed towards the 5 to 13 age group. Our research at After School Investments has shown that ideally professional development systems, I'm talking about systems here, not just professional development, the systems have several qualities. The efforts follow a clear sequence. The efforts count towards a requirement or a credential or a degree, and it's not necessarily just college credits, but one of those things. And ultimately, that it works towards professionalizing the field and helping after-school workers get the recognition they so badly deserve. But there are challenges in building professional development systems for after-school that are unique to after school itself. The nature of after school, the after school workforce and job is that, as we know, it's often part-time employment with low wages and high turnover. There's a lack of identity in after school, of after school work as a profession. think many of the participants, many of the workers see their work in after-school programs as temporary or supplemental work in addition to some other work they're doing, as opposed to their career. I think there's also a lack of identity of after-school as a field. After-school is a very, you know, the expression, as I mentioned before, after-school is a very big tent. It can involve anything from strict academics to athletics and physical fitness to cultural enrichment. All these things qualify as after-school, but the variety makes it difficult to put your arms around it as one thing. There are also people who work in after-school have a wide variety of prior experience and educational backgrounds. And you'll see in the same program folks who are entry-level, you know, after-school workers to long-term professionals. In addition, they may have an educational background as arts educators or child development specialists or youth advocates or social workers, all of which are valid routes to working in after-school programs, but again, variety. And you'll see after-school workers have very different professional development goals. Some will want a single training. Some will want to work towards a degree. And this shows that there's a need for a variety of approaches to professional development. Now, the early care and education field has their Child Development Associates, the CDA credential. After-school doesn't have a national credential, although there are 11 states that have a school-age care or youth worker credential or a certificate or associate degree. What we find, though, is, you know, when we're talking about a credentialing program, we're talking about something that builds off of core competencies. There's an agreement on what core competencies are. And then it outlines the types of trainings, the number of hours, whatever demonstrations of abilities are required for certification. Credentialing is really important, but it needs to be supported by other aspects of the whole professional development system. So things like the actual trainings themselves, access to those trainings, outreach so people are aware they're happening, a governance system that monitors and sets standards for all of these things. So all these things have to come together to create a proper professional development system. But in light of all this, we've invited three speakers who've been working on creating school-age youth work credentials to share their experiences, and I'm really delighted to bring them. Doug, did Vilma have an opportunity to join us yet?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Vilma. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, I'm delighted to introduce Vilma Williams. In her current position, she is the Director of Training at the Council for Professional Recognition. Ms. Williams has been involved in the development and implementation of the military school-age credential and conducts training for military school-age representatives in the United States and overseas. Vilma, I'm turning it over to you.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm very happy to be able to share information about the Military School Age Credentialing Program. The Military School Age Credentialing Program is an effort of the military. Originally, it started with the United States Army and their need to implement a system that could assess the performance of staff working with children of a school age in the military. So this credential began as an effort to make sure that the candidates that apply for this credential have all of the qualities and meet all the requirements to be able to obtain this credential. At the present time, the credential is awarded in all of the military bases in the United States and overseas, including Europe and Korea, and Japan also. The military school age consists of an evaluation system that includes the candidate, who is the person who is aspiring for this credential, and also a team, and the team consists of a parent community representative, an advisor who represents the school age field, and a representative of the military who will complete the team. And this representative will meet with all of them. Each of these persons, including the candidate, the parent community representative, and the advisor, collect information that becomes evidence, and they will meet in a local assessment team meeting to discuss the performance of the candidate in 13 functional areas. this military school age credential took some of the model of the CDA credential and the all, you know, what we had before, the local assessment team, and the new credential, as everyone knows it now, and combined the best of both models to create this credential. In the development of the 13 functional areas, the standards, so that the candidates can be evaluated in the standards, there were many people that were involved, and one of the biggest involvement was from Diane Dodge in writing the standards. The Council for Professional Recognition administers this military school age credential, and that includes the selection and the preparation of the professionals who in turn will be completing the assessment of these candidates. The military school age person that has this position as a representative is the person that is trained and selected and whose work is monitored by the council and who completes this team. In the latest part of this assessment, the team meets and they discuss the performance of the candidate in the 13 functional areas. They vote, they have equal votes, and at the end they will consider voting that the candidate is deserved to have this credential or the candidate needs more training. At this time, the military has awarded about 2,400 school-age credentials in the military. And we have, the activity is increasing. At some points, it's, you know, there's more activity, and at some points of the year, it's less activity. We have trained lots of representatives throughout the past 3 years, and we plan on doing a training pretty soon in Korea to train more military school age representatives.
Thank you, Vilma. So, I have a question.
Sure.
Are there particular subject areas that the people who are trying to get credentialed find most challenging to master in order to get the credential?
Well, the candidates need to be trained, need to have education on all 13 functional areas, which include safe, healthy, out-of-school environments, physical communication. However, you know, in all of the functional areas, on and on. However, because it's a military school age credential, they have developed their own modules to train them. So their training is very comprehensive, and it covers all of these areas. But the credential has specific areas like the out-of-school environment where the candidate has to learn how to use the space, the relationships, materials, and routines and resources so that they can construct an environment that is secure and enjoyable for the children of a school age. Everything that they have to do has to be geared towards that age. And, you know, they also have to learn to be good managers of their program and use the resources for an effective operation. So there are some specific things that you actually don't get in a school per se that they have to be provided by special training. Now, the military happens to have that special training for them.
I see.
And so when I think about other states creating credentials, it's not just the credential, but the training that goes along with the credential that also needs to be structured to meet the needs of the candidate who wants to obtain the knowledge. The key for this is that it's not just the knowledge that the candidate must have, but also the how this knowledge is connected into the practice. And I believe that when the candidates understand and have internalized that, have managed that, you know, that is when they're ready for the credential.
Is this the same credential across all four branches of the military, or is it for one specific branch?
Well, it is. It began with the Army, but the Army, especially overseas, the Army embraces the other branches of the military, so they decided 4 years ago, they decided to change the name. It used to be the Army's College Credential. They decided to change it to the Military's College Credential because of that, because it is not any long. It's not just the Army credential anymore. It is for all the branches.
I see. Were there any issues in getting the other branches to also embrace or accept this standard? The reason I'm asking is I'm thinking about the issues about getting localities to share similar standards, and then a parallel to the state's experience.
The only challenges probably that they had had to do with timing, of course, money. You know, money, yeah, they had to do with that, and specifically they had to do with the council representative, the military school age representative, excuse me, the person that has to complete the meeting, because this is like the facilitator, has to bring everyone together. This person is trained to conduct this final assessment. So and when I talk about money, it was because the law for the Army said that the receiving installation is the one that would pay for all the expenses of this school age representative. So they have to work arrangements among the branches to be able to have in their budget enough money or to foresee how much they were going to need to be able to cover the expenses of the representative. Now, in some places, it was much more challenging than in other places because we're talking about bases in Korea, in Japan, you know, where the representatives are not that many in number. And when we have representatives, they actually cannot do these assessments because they present a conflict of interest, because they cannot do the same people that they train.
I see, right.
They have to keep some, you know, some objectivity. So that was the challenge, really. But as far as the standards, no, the standards were pretty much. Actually, we found that the standards brought a lot of uniformity in their programs, because a lot of the programs who didn't meet the standards that were required, you know, the things that the candidate needs to collect, for example, the documentation that they need to collect and things like that. If they didn't have it, they needed to develop them. So that created standards within the programs in the different branches that brought some uniformity for them.
Thank you very much, Vilma. That's really helpful. I'd like to now turn to introduce Carol Weisberg. Carol Weisberg is the coordinator of early childhood and youth programs at Charter Oak State College in Connecticut, and she's worked closely with Charter Oak State College to develop the coursework for their credential and after-school education. Welcome, Carol.
Thank you, Robert, and thank you for having me on today's conference call. I'm really happy to hear about the military credential and that how strong it's still going, because I believe it was the basis for a lot of the state credentials that we have now. It certainly was the case in New York when I was living there and part of the New York State credential development, and then now here in Connecticut. And it plays a part in the history of how our this credential in after-school education came about. I think it was in 2000, Connecticut was part of a pilot, I think working with the Council for Professional Recognition, to implement a similar model of a credential for school-age care providers here. And they actually had 11 people go through that pilot SAC credential, school-age care credential. And for one reason or another, funding went away, things changed, and that particular model of a school-age credential here in Connecticut did not continue. So when I became part of the picture here and others, I was working at the Connecticut After School Network on professional development, and part of our mandate was to create professional development opportunities, including college courses for school-age care providers for professionalizing the field here in Connecticut. And out of the woodwork came these folks who had a school-age care credential but no place to renew it and to, you know, keep that current. So that got us talking about creating another creating another credential for after-school providers here in Connecticut. And we partnered with Connecticut Charts, of course. I was my ears were perking up when you talked about being part of a system of professional development and how that works out and plays out here in Connecticut. Because we have lots of support for the CDA and for early childhood education. But folks who work in after-school programs didn't have the same kinds of opportunities for coursework or the breadth of training that you could find for early childhood. And Connecticut Charts, of course, was eager to partner with us to help that continuum of professional development for all folks who work with children in child care. So they put us together with Charter Oak State College, and that's how the credential was born. And we made a conscious decision to create a credential that was entirely credit-based, and so that it would become, because the other challenge here in Connecticut was on the licensing of programs end. Directors were finding it very difficult to have the coursework that their head teachers have count towards head teacher certification in Connecticut. In Connecticut, you need, at the minimum, a CDA and 12 credits in your field, either early childhood education or school-age care. And school-age care was kind of, you know, odd, because I think one community college had a class that was introduction to school-age care. There was, not much specific to school-age care. So that's how we looked at competency-based areas, kind of based on the CDA competency areas and on school-age and on best practices in school age. What were quality indicators for the staff of a school age program? And that's where we started. So we created a series of four courses and a practicum. And this credential is a combination of experience and education. There's a fifth course, which is the practicum, that encompasses the experience piece. So our courses are an introduction to after-school care and education, and that covers best practices, the NAA standards, as well as a breadth of competency areas for working with children, health and safety, child development is weaved through every course, indoor and outdoor environments, social, emotional development, cognitive development, et cetera. And then the second course is child and adolescent development, and it's the course child and adolescent development that actually has been approved, again, fitting into that system as a course for someone who would be going for teacher certification on the bachelor's level, so we were quite happy about that. in a program environment and curriculum direct development course, as well as the fourth course is the supervision and leadership in after-school education. And the practicum course is kind of the capstone. All through each course, students prepare a professional development resource file. And those are separate assignments and observations and research that they collect throughout every course. And in the practicum, they put all this breadth of professional resource material together to be evaluated. They work one-on-one with an instructor. And they also have an on-the-job evaluation from a supervisor, which we, who we deal with directly. So we don't actually go out and observe the candidate, but the candidate must have an observation based on the competencies. And we provide a form, detailed form for that. Also, when we created this credential, we were, we were aware of how close we are to other states, and if this is a college credit-based credential, how would we incorporate other states' school-age care credentials? So right on our application from day one, we felt that someone who came from another state with school age credential would meet at least two of the courses, that we would acknowledge that they've had good training in that introduction to after school care and education, and good training in program environment and curriculum development. So they would already have the 6 credits if they were coming from another state with a school age credential, and could fold into this credential by taking the other 2 courses and the practicum. If someone were wanting to get this credential and had no experience, but they had wanted to go into school age care, then we would have a 3-credit practicum at the end so that they would gain the experience and have a mentor working with them.
I want to remind folks that the course descriptions that Carol is talking about are available on our website. And I believe in the course descriptions is a link to download the syllabus.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be very helpful information. But I wanted to ask you a question, Carol.
Sure.
You had the benefit of a friendly relationship with Connecticut Charge of the Course.
Mm-hmm.
What advice would you give to people who want to join an existing system but don't yet have that kind of relationship?
Mm. I would say relationship building is extremely important. We not only we're inclusive with working together with Connecticut Charts, of course, and have their support and valuable input on the development of the credential, but we also had at the table, at least invited, let's put it that way, the State Department of Education. And they were included in all the minutes of the meetings and the discussions on the competencies and the courses and how they would flesh out and the experience requirement, as well as the Connecticut Department of Public Health was included. We welcome their inclusion as well because they're the folks that license child care in Connecticut. And I think that's critical to involve not only the practitioners, very important, they were at the table, and as well as these, is also to involve the folks who are going to be looking over your shoulder, and putting their stamp of approval on this down the way, because our big fear was, what the Department of Public Health was not going to say right out in front of offering these courses that they would accept them. But someone would have to submit them once they took the course. And so, however, they were at the table through the whole development of the credential, each of the courses and the, what it was going to look like, so that they were very comfortable that, yes, this did meet state requirements as a course applicable clearly for someone working in an after-school program. So I would say take the time to build the relationships. Take the time.
You say it's important to get the stakeholders, all stakeholders involved early.
Yes, and I wanted to expand that it's not just the one, one body, but all folks that are that may want to have a say in how your credential is going to play out and look, if you can.
Great. Thanks very much, Carol. That's very interesting.
I have one last thing to say.
Oh, absolutely.
Out of the credential, we have taken these 4 courses, and they are now the basis of a concentration for after-school providers and youth care specialists to be able to get a bachelor's degree with a concentration in child and youth development.
And have you seen a number of people taking
it? I've seen people with interest for getting a lot of phone calls.
Great. Sounds great. Great. Well, I'd like to now welcome Harry Kujath, my friend Harry Kujath, who is the director of the Missouri After School Network. He has 30 years of service to the Missouri Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, and part of his work there was developing and administering training to after school programs in public schools statewide. Welcome, Harry.
Welcome. Glad to be here. I'm going to start very simply with ours. Ours is kind of a basic of approach about, coming up with a credential. Ever since school started, there's always been changes involved in education in the process of youth development and activities. And in the last, few centuries, we begin to take a look at things that go on beyond school, and you get to the point into the more recent time, you know that after school is a term that is used by a lot of individuals, by a lot of stakeholders, about how important that time is out of school. And so after school is a big issue here in Missouri, and it really encompasses both before and after school activities, but we try to use the one term after school to include all those activities that take place outside of the classroom setting. And the big thing, once those things became, you know, very prominent and brought out to the attention of everybody, it's important for parents to realize that they're going to be providing their children time at these entities to be there for a certain number of hours when they're not in school and the parents are not available for taking care of them. So they want to be sure that they're going to be in a structured environment, one that is safe, one that is going to promote youth development activities, and one that is going to be administered and run by individuals who have some understanding and some experience and some knowledge in the areas of youth development and activities for kids, both young and old. When we talk about after school, it's K to 12. So we have the kindergarten students, and we go all the way up to the high school age. So we have a lot of age variances in our after school program. So the credential is one way for individuals who are in the field, working in the area of after school, and who have some experiences, but then need to have a little bit more in-depth training and more in-depth learning experiences to really broaden their scope and to make them more expertise in the areas of the specific things that are involved with the youth and the ages of the youth that they are working with. So it's rather, you know, an important idea that, and this came about. One of the things here in Missouri is that we have a lot of statewide organizations. We have the Missouri After School Network, which I'm involved with. We have the Missouri School Age Community Coalition, which has been around for many years and provides a lot of personalized professional development activities for after-school programs. I also was a president of that organization in the last couple of years, so I was involved in this whole process of the credential with not only with the network but also with the MOSAC, the Missouri School Age Community Coalition organization. So it was MOSAC's idea basically to come up with a credential, and they got a grant from AT&T, which they were involved in doing training and professional development across the state, and AT&T got them involved in doing some specific training for individuals who worked in the AT&T entities around our state. And through that grant, they also received money on the way of developing a credential that could be used on all or for all after-school programs. So it was through the MOSAC and their work with AT&T that provided the funds and began the work on this credential. And it's really a commitment by those in the field. Individuals who want to go through the credential process here in Missouri have to have at least 480 hours of after-school activities in the youth and working with youth before they can even be accepted. We have an interviewing process, whereas individuals will go out and not only assess the qualities, the standards, their capabilities of where they are and look at their programs and their activities, but also get a commitment from those people that they really and truly want to follow through with all of the work that's going to be necessary for the Missouri Youth Development Credential. And once that has been established and so on, then the work actually begins in the areas of credentialing. And it's one that takes on a lot of activities. So the one thing that every individual must go through is maintaining a professional portfolio. And within this professional portfolio is experiences that they've gone to, all the classes they attend, the specific training times that they attend, the number of hours that they have been working in after school. But it goes a little bit even beyond that. It has questionnaires that go out to parents of the children that they serve. It goes out surveys and questionnaires to the administrators of their programs. So it's a more in-depth study of an individual and not just point-blank, you know, classroom or coursework. It involves the actual hands-on, you know, where the rubber meets the road activities for these individuals in after school to be involved in the credentialing experience. And it's a much broad base in that it covers a lot of different activities and a lot of different things that goes on in a person who's trying to develop and get into the and to receive a credential. So it was really, you know, boiled down to the fact that we knew that there was a need to demonstrate the professional status of after-school staff. People who work with youth and children and youth needed to have some recognition for what they did and how they did it. For a long time, after-school activities were just, you know, called babysitting and sitting in for parents until they can get off of work, those types of things. But now research has proved that the importance of after-school goes far beyond that, and the benefits are lifelong, lasting things that can happen for youth if they are in a good quality, structured environment that allows the youth to develop on their own status and their own nature as youth learn and develop in many different ways. So it's important that the credential, you know, was developed and is in place. It got implemented basically in St. Louis and Kansas City because that's where the AT&T entities were, and that helped us get it started in, based in on two community college systems, one in St. Louis, one in Kansas City, and also the Francis Child Development Center in Kansas City was a huge provider and implementer for the credential. So we have this in place now where it works on, and the idea was that once it was developed in such a way that it can be duplicated and it can be done by other entities. So when we had the credential developed in St. Louis and Kansas City, we pretty well had already developed a model that can be duplicated in other parts of the state if they so choose and can follow our standards and follow our credentialing requirements. So it's a system that allows entities from across the state to be involved in this activity and not just those who are in our two major large urban areas. So the credential itself is really a status for youth development practitioners. It's a way of highlighting the training that they've already gone through. It highlights the experiences that they've gone through. It highlights the college coursework that they have gone through and other additional trainings that they have gone through. But it really brings out the fact that the after-school professionals are individuals who are really worthy of that term professional based upon the activities and the things that they've gone through. So it's very, you know, structured in such a way that it really kind of builds on what people know and where they need to go to be a really a professional and a quality provider in the state of Missouri. From the credential, basically we were doing a lot of other activities. Like I said, there is no one entity that does everything. We had core competencies for youth development people that was put together by three agencies. One was the After School Network. Another was the Kansas After School Network. And the others was the Opportunities in a Professional Education Network, which is an initiative here in Missouri. We're able to get together and really work diligently on coming up with core competencies, a bi-state core competency list for youth development people. And this is really the basis for the professionalism of youth development individuals, and it certainly ties right into the credentialing activities and so on. They go hand in hand. And was very instrumental in the development of that so that the credentialing aspects could even be highlighted more and provide services to those individuals who are not yet ready for credentialing, but provides them all the necessary competencies and skills that they would need to have in order to be ready to go into the credentialing aspect. So it was really a joint effort between Missouri and Kansas to get that done. And then from there, the network has developed quality standards for all after-school programs. We don't mandate these. These are not mandated by any state agency. They are quality standards that are based upon after-school programs that can be reached at any level, whether it be rural, or suburban, or urban, whether it be large or big, whether they have one staff or, you know, 50 staff. It's standards that all after-school programs can take a look at. And once again, it plays very well into the core competencies and the credentialing aspect. And then from that, we developed a self-assessment tool, which is really the key for after-school programs in the state of Missouri, in that they can take this tool and they read it, they assess themselves, and then based upon where they see themselves is where they begin to work on the competencies and the skills necessary to become a quality provider to our youth in the state of Missouri. So we have a lot of entities that get involved in this whole aspect, but they all blend together very well. One's built upon the other, and it's kind of hard to see where one ends and where the other one stops because there is such a tremendous effort to coordinate the activities of all of our organizations, and now we're working with Kansas in the areas of core competencies. And we also work with Kansas in the areas of developing what we're now working on. It's a youth development director's credential, which is taking individuals who have the youth development credential and either are working on or already in the administration levels of our after-school programs and youth development activities. So it takes them a step above where they would be with a youth development credential and gets them more into the components of what an administrator would have to be dealing with. So it's a little bit far and above some of the competencies and skills necessary for those that deal with the youth on a hands-on basis. But it's also another entity that requires a little bit more additional work and commitment on the work of the youth development professionals. So we have all these activities that are going on, and they all kind of blend together. But really the major start of this whole activity was the credentialing done by MOSAC. And that has been, you know, one of the driving forces for trying to bring in the quality issues for professionals around our state. And this will end by saying you can go to the two websites. One is from the Missouri School-Aged Community Coalition website, which is simply MOSAC2.org. And then the other one is the network's website, which is MASN.org. So those two websites will provide a lot of information for you, and you can get questions answered on both those websites as well. But that's another good way of going to learn more about what's happening here in Missouri. And I'll leave it for there.
I want to ask a question, Harry. When you were getting to the when your coalition was trying to get to agreement on the elements of, you know, the different pieces of the credential, how did you address the big tent issue, the idea that there's so many different ideas of after school, and were there any particular sticking points?
Well, I mean, the real sticking point is what we all can, you know, agree upon, and it's kind of difficult when you have, you know, all kinds of different terms that float out around our state, you know, the out-of-school time, extra learning opportunities, and, you know, numbers and numbers and numbers of different things. We at the network basically have tried to zeroed in on one term that kind of includes everything. It's called we call it after school simply because it goes on, what's, you know, happens after the school, and that's from the time the school ends to the time the school begins. So we include before school activities as well as after school activities. We include the evening sessions. We include weekend sessions, and based upon that, it was a little easy for people to buy into and not worry so much about what they've been using or giving up. They can actually still use their same terms if they're going to use out of school time. That's fine. But in a much broader nature when we talk about after school. So that was a little bit of a concern for us. But one of the major things that we did at the very beginning was to see what other states were doing. You know, what was their definitions? What were their credentialing aspects if they had any? What were their thoughts about credentialing if they didn't have any? So we really went out first and tried to seek what was going on in all the other states. And then we were able to take all that information and really kind of condense it or summarize it for our evaluations and services here.
I see. So there was a good amount of listening and conversation first.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Great, great. Well, thanks very much, Harry. That's absolutely great. What I'd like to do now is open up our question and answer period. Doug, can you help out with that?
Yes, I can. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will be conducting a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, you may press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handsets before pressing the star keys. Our first question comes from the line of Linda Barton. Please go ahead with your question.
Yes, hi. I was wondering if either one of your programs offer any online courses or if you're anticipating doing that in the future.
This is Carol Weisberg from Charter Oak State College.
Mm-hmm.
All our courses are delivered online.
Oh, great.
All courses of the college are delivered online, and especially the after-school courses. The practicum is a combination. It's not online, but it's over email and telephone, and they'll even get together if it's in Connecticut. So I actually have folks taking these classes from anywhere in the country. I had All due respect to the military, but I had someone on a Navy base who was running a youth program in Italy complete the credential, one of our first credential recipients.
So that also speaks to the question then, this would be applicable from, if a person wanted to take it from any state, and it could be considered, it would be accepted in any state, you know how some...
Well, I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
Charter Oak is a fully accredited, regionally accredited, you know, four-year college.
Mm-hmm.
So the coursework is the coursework and the credit is the credit, so it should be accepted anywhere.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'd like to ask a question on behalf of one of our listeners who emailed us a question in earlier. This is to the entire group. Do you guys have any lessons learned about piloting or, in particular, outreach and promotion of your credential? Any advice about getting the word out?
Yeah. Harry, I don't know if you want it. Ours is very different, but we do... we talk about it at national conferences as well as local conferences, and right now I'm starting to work with a local foundation to bring a cohort of people through all four courses of the credential. The challenge for college credits, in-state or out-of-state, of course, is the cost of the education of the course, and we have some support, some scholarship support through the Connecticut After School Network. And so, I work very hard to get that kind of dollar support so that folks can afford to take the course. What I would say is a lesson learned, however, is I would not fully scholarship folks. We tried a cohort on full scholarship, and it wasn't as successful as I had hoped it would be. I think that people take these are college level courses, take them more seriously and work harder when they have some investment of their own into the coursework. I like the Kansas model about interviewing and meeting one on one with every single person that goes through or accepts to the work ahead of them on their credential. We don't have that luxury, so. So I think folks need to invest themselves as well as some of their dollars into taking the coursework.
This is Vilma Williams. As far as the military is concerned, because this credential is exclusively, for the military, all candidates must work in a Department of Defense College program, and they have to be observed working as a program lead. But the Department of Defense has been very generous. The military has been very generous to help anyone who has reached out to them to look for help in order to get information or documentation, materials, or anything so that they can start a program such as the one that they have. So if anyone is interested in getting the information, materials, the competency standards, or all the instruments that are used, they're very, very willing to share them with anybody that wishes to have them. If you wish to have them, you need to contact the council. You can call me. I don't know if you already got the information.
It should be on the website, though.
Yeah, on the website, which is www.cdacouncil.org.
Do we have any other questions?
Our next question comes from the line of Krista Galloway. Please go ahead with your question.
Hi, I was just wondering, aside from the military program, are there are there any career and wage ladders? Are there any compensation for people once they've received a degree? Is there any partnership with companies or or the people who are actually, what are the requirements there?
Oh, well, the requirements, you want to know about the requirements and then the compensation?
Well, I know the military has extra compensation for people once they've received
yes.
the credential, but I was actually wondering from the others if there were any programs in place there.
Well, here in Missouri, we have a little bit different approach in trying to get the professional credentialing out to everybody. We have several organizations, as I mentioned, the MOSAC and the network. We provide training. We have, the network has seven individuals around our state who provide face-to-face training and professional development to individuals. MOSAC does training and conferences throughout the year. So we have a good opportunity. We also work very closely with state agencies to get the word out about the credentialing aspect and the quality standards and those types of things. And so what we're looking for as we try to complete this is, what's the benefit? It's a hard sell for individuals that give up time and effort and in some cases actual money to pay for classes when there's not going to be any benefit at the end of the road. So we've been trying the approach of working with the actual after-school providers to see if there is not a way that they might be able to compensate individuals. And we know it's not going to be a lot. We know it's not going to be much. But we're trying to get individuals to recognize the time, the effort, and the outcome of a credentialing aspect for professionals in our state. So it's not there yet, I can tell you that much, but certainly we're trying to work and find ways to get that around. And certainly we go about around the state and we visit with legislators and with state agencies. We really promote the credentialing aspect and the benefits of that for staff that they normally pay for. They normally have some funding, subsidy funding or something goes to, and the need for, that type of professional credential.
Okay, thanks.
Carol, is there any wage?
Yeah, that's sort of something I've advocated for all my life. We're still fighting that battle here. We're working in Connecticut on a quality rating system, and I think built into that rating system will be hopefully some dollars and incentives for folks who are furthering their education towards credentialing. There's a big focus here on early childhood and workforce development and raising the bar and the floor for requirements for folks who work in early childhood education programs to be in line with the NAEYC accreditation standards and with Head Start standards, which are going to be requiring a minimum of associate's degree and bachelor degrees for teachers. We're getting swept up in that. So I always am, reminding people about after school and youth development and the need to, along with professionalizing the field, to compensate the field. So I'm with you.
Yeah. I'm doing the same thing here in Washington. So.
Let's keep battling.
Thanks.
I'd like to ask one more question from a listener who's written to us. In Missouri and Connecticut, what is the actual organization that is doing the awarding of the credential?
In Connecticut, it's Charter Oak State College. And at Charter Oak State College, we have a lot of credentials. We have the Connecticut Director's Credential, which is an administrator's credential. And we are embarking on an infant toddler care credential as well as a parenting educator credential. So Charter Oak State College here in Connecticut is the one who's administering this credential.
Thanks. How about Missouri?
It's the Missouri School Age Community Coalition, a statewide organization. They basically provide all the services and do all the checking and making sure that everything is done and done correctly, and then they award the certificate based upon those individuals that do complete all the requirements. So it's through that agency alone that does that.
Thanks, Harry. Are there any more questions on the line?
We do have a follow-up question from the line of Linda Barton. Please go ahead with your question.
Yes, thank you. Actually, it goes along the same discussion that the other listener alluded to or talked about, and that is the incentives available or how do you market. I'm trying to I've been working about a year and a half with our community college system here in Wyoming to encourage credentialing, and they're very open to that, and I'm concerned that once we go through that process and put that in place, what's the incentive for folks to take these courses, since we all know that after-school programs work on grant-funded monies, and there really isn't a lot of room for promotions within these programs, unless somebody, you know, like the director dies or goes away. But,
my gosh.
You know, it's true in that the money, you know, the usually when people take courses in general, while they want to improve themselves, they're also looking for financial
mm-hmm.
benefits. And so
yeah.
I think you've already addressed those questions, but it really concerns me, how do we market that if there is a way other than encouraging policymakers to give us more money?
Well, it goes along, and this is Harry from Missouri again,
mm-hmm.
it goes along with the same idea of accreditation or licensing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can do those things, but you don't get any more money. You can't collect any more money or those kinds of things. But it's the whole aspect of being in a profession and trying to better yourself and better your program. And it's always, you know, even the credentialing aspect, you know, we never really try to express upon an individual that once you get this, you're going to be, you know, highlighted and put on, you know, pedestal somewhere. It's going to help you. It's going to provide you the expertise and the knowledge and understanding to provide better services to your children. And that's how we approach the whole aspect, is that it could, whether it be accreditation or whether it be credentialing, is that it's a way for you as an individual and you as an organization to develop quality aspects in your program to better serve your clientele. And that in turn goes back out to the whole given community. So we try to do it from that aspect. And then we bring in other entities, people who are not necessarily always involved in it, like the businesses. The private sector, you know, it really has a huge part into promoting and highlighting the activities of after school, particularly, as they will have done in early childhood. You know, the early childhood has always been on the front burner of a lot of programs, state agencies and private sector people, colleges and universities and community colleges. And after school, you know, is really trying to push themselves into that area where they can be at the same level, the same acceptance. So it's really, it's a hard sell, but it's one that you have to constantly and continuously work on.
Well, it's a hard sell because people really are, you know, dedicating, committing a lot of time to doing it, and while we're all somewhat altruistic, there
right.
is basically some bottom line
yeah.
for
that
effort.
I think there's intrinsic, you know, rewards, what Harry was talking
mm-hmm.
about, and the recognition that everyone needs for the work that they're doing and the investment that they're making in their own education or in bettering the quality of the program. And I just think it's an uphill battle for early childhood, too,
mm-hmm.
because we're having that, you know, this discussion here in Connecticut about raising the education requirements, as I said, and I'm not quite sure that we're raising everybody's salary you know, along the way. More work has been done with early childhood than after school. But, you know, we might have to recognize that folks are on their way to other work and other positions. But while they're with us, we should be supporting their education, the quality of our programs.
That's an excellent note to end on, Carol. Thank you very much. I want to thank our speakers today who are absolutely fantastic. Vilma Williams and Carol Weisberg and Harry Kujath. Thank you so much, guys. You were great.
Thank you.
I'd also like to thank Andrew Williams from the Child Care Bureau and Somya Bhatt from After School Investments. I want to encourage you to check out the After School Investments website. The transcript and accompanying materials from today's audio conference will be on the website. There's also a wealth of other resources related to after school. And also, while you're on the website, please download and complete an evaluation. Your feedback is very important to us. We absolutely welcome follow-up questions, comments, and definitely suggestions for future audio conferences like that. So on behalf of After School Investments and the Child Care Bureau, I'd like to thank you and say have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's teleconference. Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect your lines at this time.